I'm pulling away from the school. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. So today was my children's first day of school, so I was dropping them off. So I'm coming. Luckily, the school's right near my house, so you will get a full drive to work podcast. Okay, last we met, I've been talking about Onslaught, but I'm not yet done. In fact, I think last we met, I had gotten up to J. So I'm going to start speeding things along here. So if we don't want this to be infinite number of podcasts. Okay, so we're going to start today with Kamal, Fist of Krosa. So he's 4 green for a 4/3 druid legend, and he has 2 abilities. So for 1 green mana, target land becomes a 1/1 till end of turn. And for 2 green, so 5 total, 3 of which is green, creatures you control get +3/+3 and trample. So for those that recognize his second ability is exactly the spell Overrun. Overrun was originally in Tempest, my first set, and it did exactly that. It gave all your creatures +3/+3 and trample. So originally, by the way, Kamal's original ability was that he could animate lands, and then he gave a bonus to all lands. He either gave all lands +1/+1 or +2/+2, and so his original playtest name was Kamal Landlord. And the idea was there's a lot of other ways in the set to animate lands. So not only could he animate lands, but he could reward you for having other animated lands. But we decided that was a little too much, especially for the main character. Kamal, for who those who don't know, is the main character of the story. He was in the previous story, so Odyssey and Onslaught are a continuation. So Kamal, Pit Fighter, was the main character. He was a red card in Odyssey. And then this is the continuation of the story, but he has changed. When we tend to do characters and more than once, often we'll change their color to demonstrate how they've changed. And he started as a pit fighter, but he slowly realized that he needs to sort of be a champion of the world and a champion of Krosa. So he becomes Kamal, Fist of Krosa. One of the things that was fun about him was that we were trying to find ways to feel like he's the same person, but yet he has a different feel to him. But anyway, he definitely is. He was very red in his red incarnation. He's very green in his green incarnation. But he is actually a pretty fun card. And he definitely encourages you to play a lot of creatures, because he sort of stampedes for the win. So you want to have a lot of little creatures. Next, Krosan Tusker. 5 green for a 6/5 beast. And it cycles for 2 and a green. If you cycle it, you get to go get a basic land and put it into your hand. So this card, later on, when I get to it, this is Onslaught, and then there was Legions, and then there was Scourge. In Scourge, Brian Tinson, the lead designer of Scourge, messes around with what we call land cycling. This is the precursor to that. This is definitely the idea of, here's this creature, and I can use this creature, or if I choose to cycle it away, it helps you get land. Now, you also get to draw a card, so it's sort of like you get to go get a land and cantrip. So you actually get 2 cards when you cycle this, because you get a land and the card you draw from the cycling. But the idea of this card is it's a giant big beast, but it costs 7 mana. So later in the game, it's very valuable to you. But earlier on, when you actually need mana, you know, it's nice in that it bookends. And it's definitely, it's the same sort of space that Brian will later explore a bit more in Scourge. Next, Lavamancer Skill. So Lavamancer Skill is an enchantment, an aura, enchant creature, for 1 R, and the enchant creature has tap, deal 1 damage to target creature or player, and if a wizard, the enchant creature also gains tap, do 2 to target creature. So there's a bunch going on here. Let me talk about this. So first off, this is still back before enchant auras, so it actually said enchant creature on it. The aura technology hadn't come yet. So this is interesting in that this ability, it does 2 abilities. First is it grants basically the Prodigal Sorcerer ability, or now the Prodigal Pyromancer ability. But remember, this is before that had really been cemented as a red thing. I think what happened was when Alpha came out, Richard Garfield made a Prodigal Sorcerer. And it was a blue card, and it tapped and did damage. And Richard kind of liked the idea that, well, it's just, it's little small, little small effects. And he's a wizard, and we want to see Blue doing wizardy like things. And so, well, we'll let Blue do little things. He doesn't do big amounts of direct damage. But eventually we realize it's just kind of antithetical to Blue, and that Blue having any direct damage is not really what Blue's supposed to be about. And so eventually we move this ability into Red. So Prodigal Sorcerer became Prodigal Pyromancer. In fact, the first time we made Prodigal Pyromancer was in Planar Chaos, which was a color-shifting set, where we all the cards on the bonus sheet were all cards that existed in Magic but redone and reconcepted in a different color. And so Prodigal Sorcerer was redone as Prodigal Pyromancer. Now, that's one of those alternate reality things that became real and ended up getting into Magic. But this is the first time, or in very, very early time, where we're toying with it in Red. I mean, clearly, Red could always do it, but this is definitely us going, okay, previously, like in Urza Saga, we had made this ability as a blue card. You know, it's an orc. Well, it's a Prodigal Sorcerer, so you become a Prodigal Sorcerer as a blue card. Now you see it slowly shifting to Red. You can see this in the beginning. One of the neat things about Magic, to go back and look at its history, is you can kind of see decisions we make and watch it start pushing in certain directions. One of the things I'll do today, and I do this in general when I sort of look through old sets, is when I see little hints of places that we ended up going, I try to point them out to go, here's a little seed of what we were doing. Now, this card also has another function, which actually in some level was its main function, which is, fine, it's a Tim, not a bad idea, you might play it, but if it's a wizard, it does 2 damage to creatures. And that really is where this card shined in Limited, which was, are you playing a wizard deck? Oh, well, maybe you want to consider playing a red-blue wizard deck. Or a red, a red-blue wizard deck. So this was set up to be in a color combination where you might want to do some stuff that you might not normally do. And that this was, one of the things we like to do is give you cards that sort of, if you take it early, it sends you down a path. And that path is something unique to that card. But you want a couple cards like that in the draft to sort of go, ooh, maybe I want to go down this path. And if you got this card, you know, early on, or if you took Wizards early on, you could opt into Red and go the blue-red path. There was a Wizards deck that revolved around drafting Lava Master skill. Next, Lightning Rift. So it's 1R, 1 and a red, for an enchantment. When anyone cycles a card, you may pay 1 to do 2 damage to target creature or player. You can shock anything. I talked about this in my very first podcast in Onslaught. This was the card that I made to demonstrate the entire concept of maybe cycling could be a trigger. And as I talked about, one of the things that was neat is saying cycling is pretty modular as they go. That meaning there's no reason to play multiple cycling cards in the same deck. And that cards like this definitely said, you know what, maybe you want to do that. All of a sudden, if you pick, like I talk about drafting, if you pick this card up early in the draft, you want to get your hand on every cycling card you can. You might play cycling cards that you would not normally play, but because it's in this deck, you know, enable it. The other interesting thing about this card that we've moved away from is this is still at a point where we look at everything, meaning this card doesn't trigger off you cycling, it triggers off anyone cycling. And so it did this weird thing where if you got it out, your opponent really had to be careful about when they cycled, and they would try to cycle when you were tapped out so that you couldn't make use of this. Oh, I should also point out, when I originally made this card, I didn't put a mana on it. I mean, it cost mana to cast, but I didn't put a mana on its activation. And then playtesting showed us that it was really strong. It's funny, Astral Slide somehow didn't get the activation cost, and Lightning Rift did get an activation cost. And Astral Slide would prove to be the more problematic card, I think, because it didn't have the cost. In general, one of our new strategies is we tend to err toward the sides of having costs, that normally when you get effects and they're just free, degeneracy often follows, so we're more likely these days, whenever we're even remotely on a repeatable thing, we usually put mana on it. Next, Misformed Dreamer. 2U, 2-1 illusion with flying, and for 1, it can become the creature type of any creature type of your choice on your turn. So there's a bunch of misformed creatures. All the misformed creatures have the ability, 1: choose a creature type, become that creature type to end of turn. So it was this ability. Remember when I told the story about how I came in and gave some advice to the design team? These cards, they were all in blue. They were in the file at higher rarities, and I said, this was the glimmer of I saw a little bit of tribal. This was what said, oh, well, these are really cool. And my problem was, I liked these cards a lot, but at the time, there just wasn't that much tribal in the set. And I was like, okay, it's neat these become any tribe, but you know, it'd be cool if it meant something. And then as we upped the amount of tribal in the set, all of a sudden, these things started becoming much more interesting. It's like, oh, well, whatever I play them in, whenever I need something, they can become something to help. And they did a lot of cool, fun things. Next, mobilization. So this is an enchantment for 2 and a white, so 3 total. Soldiers have vigilance, although it wasn't keyworded yet, so it said, you know, soldiers didn't tap on attack. And then for 2W, you can make a 1/1 soldier. So this is definitely an example. So one of the things about soldiers is, soldiers, we like the idea that soldiers came with armies. That soldiers weren't big, and that because we supported a bunch of different creature types, soldier being one of them. And so the idea of a soldier was, a soldier beat you because it created an army. It's not that any one soldier was particularly that powerful. The strength of soldiers lies not in the individual soldiers, but in the soldiers together. And so what this card was trying to do, it just helped you. Like, this is like, you know, this was a rare. It's like, okay, you get this card, this thing will come pumping our soldiers. This card makes sure you have soldiers. It also gives all your soldiers vigilance, so it allows your soldiers to be both offensive and defensive at the same time. And the idea is that it's not that you, like, if I have overwhelming forces, it's not that you can't kill some of my guys, but some of them will get through. And that a lot of the way white works is the idea of, the way it rewards the army is it makes a lot of little guys, and then it has rewards, usually sweeping rewards that affect everybody. Okay, next. Mythic Proportions. 4 green, 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 so 7 mana total, 3 of which is green. Enchant creature at the time, not enchantment aura. So enchanted creature gets +8/+8, and trample. So one of the things we had done is during Urza's saga, we had made a cycle of cards, which we call the Make Me cycle. Where it's like, make me a Sarah Angel, make me a Singer Vampire, where what they were is they were enchantments or auras that you put on a creature that helped turn it into a famous magic iconic creature. And those were very popular, and they tended to make things +3/+3, +4/+4. So we decided, I mean, this is really just one, you know, a one of, but we're like, okay, let's really see how far we can push an aura. And this is the first time I believe we've ever made something this big. I mean, we later would go on to make some big stuff as well. But this is the first time just sort of like, bam! You know, it turns, whatever it is, it turns into a dangerous, dangerous threat. Because even if it's a 1/1 vanilla creature, it's now a 9/9 trampler. And if it's bigger, it's just even more dangerous. Okay, next. Nantuko Husk. So this is a card we don't always call it Nantuko Husk, but we make it a lot. So Nantuko Husk is a 2 and a black for a 2/2 zombie insect. The reason is the Nantuko were insect creatures, and he's dead, so he's a zombie insect. And you sacrifice a creature to give it +2/+2 to end of turn. So this is one of those cards. The reason we keep referring to the card is this is one of those cards that, like, seems really simple on the surface and then does all sorts of crazy good things. It does lots of good things. One of the things that we were trying to do with the cleric deck, both the clerics and the zombies, made use of sacrifice in different ways. Zombies had the ability to generate a lot of zombies, which you then could use as fodder, where clerics tend to sacrifice for effect. But anyway, and also, black also had regeneration ability, had reanimation abilities and stuff. So, but Nantuko Husk is just one of those cards that, like, we don't always call it Nantuko Husk, but it just works in a lot of sets. It's definitely one of those cards that, like, seems very simple, but when you actually start interacting and mixing, it just mixes really well. I mean, one of the things you look for when you're making a set is making sure that your cards kind of, like, have a nice, clean surface value, but then do a lot of things that interact in a lot of neat ways. And Nantuko Husk definitely does that. Nosy Goblin. Nosy Goblin is 2 and a red for a 2/1 goblin. Tap, sack, destroy target face-down creature. So here's an example of something that we really don't do. This is kind of out of color pie. So one of the things that we've shifted away from is red no longer destroys. Red does direct damage. If red wants to kill a creature, it does direct damage. That means that one of the problems red tends to have is it's not good at killing big creatures. Now, since a face-down creature is a 2/2, I mean, this card in modern day would probably do 2 damage to target face-down creature. The only difference there is... I guess it's not different, because if you face it, this thing would fizzle if you get a face-off, because it's not a face-down creature. You had to use it before, you know, the idea of this thing is I use it, and if they could flip it up, they could stop it. But it definitely, anyway, good example of, like, it's something that's kind of red and close to, like, it's in the ballpark of red. And it just said two damage, it would be red. But at the time, notice we have cards like Fissure, and there's the, red has some cards in the past that destroy creatures, but we've shifted away from that. That's not something red really does anymore. And the reason is we really want to differentiate red from black. I've talked about this before, that red and black and separately white and green are the two color pairs that overlap the most, and so we've been extra careful to try to separate them. Next, speaking of color pie breaking violations, Oblation, two and a white instant. Shuffle target non-land permanent into its owner's library, and then that player draws two cards. Oh man, this does all sorts of things white's not supposed to do. First off, white is not supposed to get... Okay, shuffling a permanent into a library is destroying the permanent. I understand they might draw it again, but they might have another copy and draw it. It is essentially just destroying it. And then it does this thing which I'm not a huge fan of, which says, well, I destroyed a permanent, so hey, have some cards. You know, and one of the things in general is we got to be careful. I don't like white having super, super efficient removal, and the answer to white's super efficient removal is, I'm going to give you something in return for this. I do not believe white gets to break the color pie because it gives the opponent stuff. You know, letting the opponent draw is not particularly white, you know, and destroying permanents is not particularly white. So this, this is one of my pet peeves. On top of that, I also don't, this is the whole tucking thing that goes on in Commander where, anyway, I don't like the tucking rule as a little side note. We will not go astray. We'll keep on Onslaught. Oversoul Cemetery. It's an enchantment for one and a black. At the beginning of your upkeep, if four more creatures are in your graveyard, return one of them to your hand. So this is a fun card that allows you to sort of constantly regrow things, regrow creatures. The flavor's kind of cute. Like, oh, we don't have enough berries. Sorry, you got to take back your dead. this is definitely the card. I'm a Johnny, for those who don't know. That's the psychographic, and not I'm not pretending to be a Flameswalker. I like making fun, weird, wacky decks that just do cool things. People go, what does that deck do? And this is the kind of card I like. We can just do lots of cool, weird things with it. Now, this card was good enough that I believe Spike also played it. But it's definitely a Johnny Spike card. Next, Patriarch's Bidding. Three black for a sorcery. Each player chooses a creature type and then reanimates all creatures of the chosen type. So the idea of this card is it rewards you for playing a singular creature type. Because it reanimates one creature type. Now, it does this weird thing that we don't tend to do anymore. Like, it's not that you pick a creature type and then everybody reanimates the creature type of your choice. It's that each player chooses a creature type. So, usually this card is effective because if you care about it, odds are your opponent doesn't care about it. I mean, they might. And at this point in Standard, because Onslaught was not, a lot of people did care. But it was just us trying to make a card that played into it. My memory of this card, by the way, is... we had a thing called the Wizard's Invitational. Oh, hold on a second. And the Wizard's Invitational was an online-only event in the spirit of the Magic Invitational played by Wizards employees, all Wizards employees. We now do the Community Cup that's like that, in which half is the community and half is Wizards, but this event was all Wizards. And so what I did is I had the audience build me my decks. I mean, I tweaked them a little bit. But one of the ones we were playing was, I think it was a tribal format where you had to pick a tribe. And so, I ended up playing Legends. Because remember, at the time, Legends were a tribe. They were not yet a super type. They were still creature type. And so my deck was all about, just playing these crazy, crazy Legends. And a lot of them would get discarded into my graveyard. And then when I played Patriarch's Bidding... Yeah, my opponent got something. I mean, we were playing a tribal format. So they got stuff, but I got giant, huge Legends. Because my deck was all about sort of discarding cards to do things. And, you know, and that when I would cast this card, I would just have, like, I would kill you in like a turn or two. I would just have this giant, giant army of Legends. But anyway, that's what I remember. This card reminds me of that deck. That deck was a lot of fun. I think I went 3-0 in that format. Yeah, for those who care, it was a 15-round round robin, and I went 8-7, which I was very happy with because winning the majority of main games is good for me. Next, Prowling Pangolin. I have no idea what a pangolin is. It's a beast, apparently. 3 black beast, 6-5. When it enters, you have to sack two creatures or sacrifice the prowling pangolin. I have no idea what a pangolin is. Maybe we made it up. Sometimes we don't make things up. Sometimes we do. I find it funny. Sometimes you're like, Kettle Bleepus, that's a cute name you made up. Like, no, that's actually a great mythological thing. We didn't make that one up. But pangolin, I don't know. I don't know if pangolin's some made-up thing, or I have literally no idea. But this is definitely the idea of black, you know, I get larger things for the cost of sacrifice. Also, you'll notice that one of the sub-themes of Onslaught, because tribal is the main theme, is that just there's a lot of cards that sort of reward you for having a lot of creatures. We are trying to encourage, a heavy creature environment. And so we definitely made a lot of cards that kind of rewarded you for having lots of creatures. Ravenous Baloth, 2 green green for a 4/4 beast, and you could sack a beast to gain 4 life. So, this card proved to be, this was a tournament tier card, a very well card. So one of the things at the time was, if I remember correctly, what was going on? I do know that there was a period of time where you wanted to be careful not to have creatures that, I'm trying to remember. There was a period of time where you didn't want to have creatures that could be easily killed. And so you tend to have creatures that either couldn't be killed outright or that you could gain advantage if they tried to kill them. And I know that Ravenous Baloth was played during that time. It's interesting that a lot of people also played Ravenous Baloth. It's not that they played a lot of beasts. The only beasts were the Ravenous Baloth. But just having a 4-mana 4/4 that, you know, when it was going to die anyway, often can gain you 4 life. Remember, by the way, this is back during the time when damage was on the stack, which meant that I could block your creature, deal 4 damage to your creature, and sacrifice my creature and get life off of it, which you can't do anymore. And by the way, this is a good example of why not having damage on the stack is more skill testing than damage on the stack. Because with damage on the stack, if you attack with a creature in which, let's say you attack with a 4/4, well, I could block with my 4/4. In the old world, I block with my 4/4 to kill your creature, sack my creature, get 4 life. There is no decision. That's what I do every single time. Now, I have to make a choice. Do I want to kill their 4/4? Do I want to stop the damage and gain 4 life? What do I want to do? You know, I can't just automatically do the damage, kill the creature, and get the life. I have to pick what I'm doing. Now, in this particular case, because it's a 4/4, more often you'll kill the creature. But it's the point of that having to make decisions about how best to do things leads to better gameplay. Next, Riptide Replicator. So the Riptide Replicator was X and 4 as an artifact. As it comes into play, you choose a color and a creature type, and then it comes into play with X charge counters, where X is what you paid, and then 4 and tap, make an XX token of the creature and color type you chose. Sorry, the color and creature type you chose. So if I say, I want red goblins, and then in the X I put 4, then I'm going to make 4/4 goblins, 4/4 red goblins. This is definitely something we were making because we were trying to sort of enable people to do what they want and have fun sort of mixing and matching. Now, the Riptide Laboratory, those know your story, is where they created the slivers. I'm trying to remember the story exactly, but Wrath got overlaid with Dominaria, and so they see the slivers, and they were very fascinated by them, but most of them were dead, so they started replicating their own, and when you replicate slivers, it's like one of those horror movies where you see them doing it early in the movie, and you're like, what are you doing? Yeah, it didn't go well. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of slivers in Onslaught Block, and so if you'll notice that if you name slivers with the Riptide Replicator, you can make lots and lots of little slivers, which are really good in a sliver deck. So it was definitely designed so that that story-wise, this is where the slivers got made. So if you do it with slivers, it works well. The other thing, by the way, that I really enjoy is I enjoy the fact that we let you pick a creature type, that you could make what you want. Now, one of the things that's funny, at the time, silver border cards, the only way the silver border cards affected actual black border cards was all the creature types were legal. And so you could name cow or chicken or whatever you wanted. And then they made the ruling that took that away. I forget when they did that, but it saddened me. Because like, if I want to make a blue chicken, let me make my blue chicken. Why can't I make my chicken? But anyway, now officially, now if you're at home and you're not in some sanctioned tournament and you have a replicator, make a chicken. Do it for me, make a chicken. And say, I proudly make a chicken. They'll go, that's not a supportive creature type. You go, I don't care. Anyway, the I don't care song. Okay, next. Rorik's Bladewing. Okay. He is three red, six mana total, for 6/5 Dragon Legend. Once again, Legend, still a creature type. Flying Haste. So, I'm trying to remember, I don't know how he plays in the story. Most of the ones in the story were pit fighters. Maybe he was a pit fighter, I don't know, a dragon pit fighter? I'm not sure where he played in. But he was, if you'll notice, one of the things that we did in this set, and it really paid off, is there are a lot of the legends were designed to be playable and constructed. In fact, Pro Tour Onslaught, which was in Venice, won by Osip Lebedevich, it was Onslaught block constructed, and it might be the Pro Tour with the biggest battling creatures. I mean, it was a Pro Tour all about getting out giant things and battling with giant things, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And Rorik's did very well there, and it was all the legends did well. They're just like, blah, blah, giant legend, giant legend, giant legend. Anyway, it's pretty cool. Okay, my last card today, because I'm almost to work, is Screaming Seahawk. Which, by the way, for those that don't know, the Seattle football team are the Seahawks. So this being called the Seahawk probably was not purely coincidental. So it's 4U for a 2/2 bird that flies. When it enters the battlefield, you can search your library for another copy of Screaming Seahawk. So this was us goofing around this territory. You'll see us goofing around more of cards that kind of replace themselves. There'll also be a version, for those that know your Call Blade history, we would make some cards that not only got you one, but got you all of them. And the reason we did that was, instead of each time letting you get one, we're like, just do it once, just cut down on the shuffling. You know, if each one gets you the next one, it's going to get you eventually. Let's just have less shuffling happen. That's how that came to be. But anyway, this was definitely us messing around. The birds were a supported type, and so this was definitely meant for the bird deck. It's funny, because I had always been a big fan of birds, and in Invasion, I'd made a card. Ended up being called Carry Airy Keeper, which was meant to be this bird lord, and then it got really nerfed in development. And I think in the duels or something, I apologized for. I tried to make a bird lord. I tried and I failed. So sorry. And then I said, one day I'll make you a better bird lord. And so this set has a bunch of bird lords, mostly because I felt so bad. Okay, so we are up to S. I did pretty good from J to S. So we will have one more. I can tell we have one more podcast. For Onslaught, and then we will wrap it up. But as you can, for those that heard me put my parking brake on, I am now parked in my parking spot, which means, yes, guys, this is the end of my drive to work. So thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time for the final Onslaught podcast. Bye-bye, guys.